Thank you for such a rousing kirtan this morning. This is what we do. Even the king doesn't get that. Where are we? Papanasana? Yeah? Text 79? Yeah. Translation. After visiting the holy place named Shiva Kshetra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived at Papanasana and there saw the temple of Lord Vishnu. Then he finally reached Sri Ranga Kshetra. Purport. There are two holy places known as Papanasana. One is located 8 miles southwest of Kumbakonam, and the other lies near the river Tamraparni in the district of Tirunelveli, 20 miles west of the city of Tirunelveli, Palamakora. Sri Ranga Kshetra, or Sri Rangam, is a very famous place. It lies in the district of Tiruchapalli, or Trichy, as it's called today, about 10 miles west of Kumbakonam and near the city of Tiruchirappalli, on an island in the Kaveri River. The Sri Rangam temple is the largest in India, and there are 7 walls surrounding it. There are also 7 roads leading to Sri Rangam. The ancient names of these roads are the Road of Dharma, the Road of Rajmahendra, the Road of Kulashekar, the Road of Alinadan, the Road of Tiruvikram, Tirubidi Road of Madamadi Gaish, and the Road of Ada Yavala Indana. The temple was founded before the reign of Dharmavarma, who reigned before Rajmahendra. Many celebrated kings like Kulashekar and Yamunacharya Alabandharu resided in the temple of Sri Rangam. Yamunacharya, Sri Ramanuja, Sudarshanacharya, and others also supervised this temple. The incarnation of the goddess of fortune, known as Godadevi or Sri Andal, was one of the 12 Alwars, liberated persons known as Divyasuris. She was married to the deity of Lord Ranganatha, and later she entered into the body of the Lord. An incarnation of Karmuka named Tirumanga, also one of the Alwars, acquired some money by stealing and built the 4th boundary wall of Sri Rangam. I'm smiling because I know the story. Do you know the story? If not, we'll tell it in the class. And built the 4th boundary wall of Sri Rangam. It is said that in the year 289 of the age of Kali, the Alwar of the name Tondaradipadi was born. While engaged in devotional service, he fell victim to a prostitute, and Sri Ranganath, seeing his devotee so degraded, sent one of his servants with a golden plate to that prostitute. When the golden plate was discovered, missing from the temple, there was a search, and it was found in the prostitute's house. When the devotee saw Ranganath's mercy upon this prostitute, his mistake was rectified. He then prepared the 3rd boundary wall of the Ranganath temple and cultivated a Tulsi garden there. There was also a celebrated disciple of Ramanujacharya's known as Kuresh. Sri Ramapillai was the son of Kuresh, and his son was Vagvijay Bhatta, whose son was Vedavyasa Bhatta, or Sri Sudarshan Acharya. When Sudarshan Acharya was an old man, the Muslims attacked the temple of Ranganath and killed about 1,200 Sri Vaishnavas. At that time, the deity of Ranganath was transferred to the temple of Tirupati in the kingdom of Vijayanagar. The governor of Jinji, Gopanaraya, brought Sri Ranganath from the temple of Tirupati to a place known as Singhabrahma, where the Lord was situated for 3 years. In the year 1293, Shaka, or AD 1371, the deity was reinstalled in the Ranganath temple. On the eastern wall of the Ranganath temple is an inscription written by Vedanta Deshika relating how Ranganath was returned to the temple. Omagyana Timilandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Shakshuram Militam Juna Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. We can carry on if you like. Devotees may know that I have a certain predilection for southern Vaishnavism, but I can assure you that this is quite accidental that this purport came up. This is in the sequence being read. This is describing the journey of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he leaves Navadvipa and he goes down the eastern side of India. And of course he visits the different holy places. These holy places are known as tirthas. It means a place where access to transcendental truth is possible. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a walking tirtha. He's a walking absolute truth. He is the absolute truth. He has no need of going to any temple. But he's playing the role of an ordinary devotee. He's playing the role of someone who goes on pilgrimage, and a sannyasi goes on pilgrimage for self-purification. Those of us who are not the absolute truth, we should also go on pilgrimage for self-purification. If any of you are the absolute truth, please let me know, and I will honor you and worship you. But here we have a description of the Srirangam temple. Anybody been to Srirangam? Yeah, it's very nice. It's meant to represent Vaikuntha. When you get to Vaikuntha, there are seven walls and seven gates. And at the last gate of Vaikuntha, there are two. At each of the gate, there are two guards. They all have names. And the last guards are? Oh, you know that. How do you know these things? Very good. This is good. So, and Srirangam is meant to recreate for you the experience of entering Vaikuntha. And there are many walls, and in the innermost walls are some of the innermost walls is called the Agraharam, where the Brahmins live. And it was in that place that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived with Venkatapata and his family. And today you can still go to the place where Lord Chaitanya in 1510 lived with the Bhatta family, and just over the road from the house. I went to somebody's house in Srirangam. We heard the mention of the name Kuresh. If you go to, just before you get to the main temple, there's a little temple dedicated to Nrisingadev and Kuresh. And anyway, I had some interaction with this young Brahmin, and he said, "Oh, come to our house for some hot milk." This is a traditional Vaishnava thing. And I was looking around his house. The house was made of granite. I said, "How long have you lived here?" His English wasn't so good. I said, "How long have you lived here?" He said, "Oh, 1100. I said, "No, how long has your family lived here?" He said, "Since 1100. So his family, tell that to people who are finding it difficult to find a home these days. 1100. So that was how many years? 900 years? 900 years. The same family in the same house. House was made of granite. It'll never fall down. Why? Because the king is meant to look after Brahmins. Because the king knows that his salvation is dependent on Brahmins doing puja on his behalf or praying for him. So he makes homes for the Brahmins. You can still go to these Brahmins' homes today. Anyway, in one of those homes, just over from one of those homes, is a small temple. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling separation from Lord Jagannath, he hand-carved Jagannath deities that are still there today. You can go and see them today. So not only can you have darshan of Jagannath, you can have darshan of Jagannath hand-carved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the greatest devotee of Jagannath. So what a wonderful thing. So he was there in 1510. The main deity of Ranganath, they say, is originally worshipped by Hanuman, given by Lord Ram to Hanuman, and or something like that. So the deity has been worshipped there a long time. These walls do not only have a spiritual function to remind you of Vaikuntha, they also have a practical function, because the walls are meant to protect the deity. I noticed, thank you very much, Vishakha Prabhu, I noticed that in the last few months we've had a new protective wall erected in front of the deities. This is very good, because deities need protection. Yes, the deity is Krishna, but at the same time, he is Krishna appearing in this world in a very delicate form. So one must be prepared to protect the deity. So we don't have seven walls here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, but we have one wall. We have a long drive. That helps. We have one gatekeeper. One gatekeeper at a time. And then we have a wall, another wall, one gate and two gates. It's almost seven gates. So well done. It's like coming to Vaikuntha here. So, unfortunately, the temple was attacked twice. Not this temple, but the temple in Sri Rangam was attacked twice, and 1,200 Brahmins were killed. Very, very serious. And one of the devotees was... Anyway, we won't dwell on that story, but it was very vicious, very bloody. So... there was a story of, interesting, there was a deity of, so the Mula, there's a Mula Vigraha, which is black granite, and it's Krishna, or Vishnu lying down, Mahavishnu lying down. Garbhadaksha Vishnu actually lying down, which is quite common in the south. And... granite is very—it's very impervious to any damage, and there's lots of it in South India. So whatever material you have locally, that's what you make your deity with less trouble. So when we go to Bengal, we find a lot of deities made with wood or clay. When we go to northern India and western India, we find black and white marble, and in the southern areas, we find a lot of black granite. And so, even though it's hard to carve, it's made very nicely. And it will last for 1,000 years, which is what you want. If you want to purify human civilization, you have to build a temple that is going to last at least 1,000 years. Sounds a long time, but if you go just into the local village of Aldenham, or any of 14,000 villages in the United Kingdom, you'll find a church which was built pretty much 1,000 years ago, more than 1,000 years ago, and they're still standing. So our temples should at least last that long. So the deity was the Mula. Mula Vigraha is the root Vigraha, and the Utsav Vigraha is the what we would call the festival deity, or the small deities. Big deity, small deities, that's what we call them, isn't it? Mula Vigraha and Utsa Vigraha. So the Mula Vigraha was walled in, and a fake painting put on the wall so that the attackers would not know where the deity was. And the small deities were taken, and for 30 years they went in different places. Anyway, these are, you know, brass or panchaloha deities. That's how you describe deities. You never go like that. Never go like that. When you describe the size of a deity, you meant to go like that. Why? Because that contains the absolute truth. If you put your hand upwards like that, he goes upwards. So for 30 years, the deity was traveling. And incidentally, because I helped out this particular temple of Quraysh, then the devotee there, he gave me a gift. Occasionally they take a big blob of sandalwood and they press it onto the Abhay Mudra, or the blessing hand of the deity. And this is, then the imprint of the hand is left in the sandalwood. Sandalwood dries and becomes hard, and then you can preserve that for years. So I was given one of those. Had I known that this verse was going to be for today, I would have brought it in and you could all have a smell in class. But I didn't want to push the envelope, as they say. So Prabhupada is following on the very detailed descriptions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in his commentaries. And it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that writes almost a gazetteer of all the holy places, hoping, I suppose, that his disciples are eventually going to reach those places. For this purpose, Prabhupada faithfully reproduced all of his spiritual master's purports, which also contain the descriptions, sort of frozen in time in the 1920s, 1930s. And so you can get descriptions of train tracks. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is telling us, at this point the train track splits into two and one goes up the junction and the other one comes to, there is a station where you can get off, and it's all to help you go to these places for your purification. Because what will you find in such a tirtha? Two things in a tirtha. You'll find it easier to remember the Lord. You'll find sadhus that make it easier for you to remember the Lord. And you'll find the Lord who makes it easier for you to remember him. And you'll also find the sadhus quoting scriptures. That is why the word tirtha means a crossing place on a river. It also means a sadhu. It also means a scripture. And often a person who explains that will be a sannyasi, so he's also called tirtha. You get many tirthas explaining shastra. So on this occasion, what happened was that on another occasion, because the place was attacked twice, so they took the small deity of the Lord and took it to either the capital city or to, some people say Delhi. Some people say Delhi, yeah? And when Ramanuja heard about this, he said, this is not right. He said, but it's very dangerous for you to go and reclaim the deity from the Sultan, the emperor of all of India. Very dangerous for you. This was in when was it? 1017 to 1137. So this is very, very early on. So, Babar. Okay. I'll go with that. Man in the turban says Babar. He knows these things. So he went, Ramanuja went fearlessly. He went there and he said, I would like to retrieve this beautiful Utsav Murti of Sri Rangam or Ranganath. And I ask you to present. And the Babar said, he said, I believe that my daughter has it, and she's become very attracted. You know, she plays with him like a doll. It's one of her dolls. And so Ramanuja, I suppose at that point he could have exploded and said, how dare you treat, you know, the Hindus' prime deity from the largest temple in all of India, how dare you treat us? But he didn't. He didn't say anything. He said, I'm asking. He said, what is so special about this particular doll? He said, because he's God. He's God himself. He said, you mean this little thing is Allah himself? He said, come on. He said, prove it to me. He said, he can't even walk by himself. He's a statue. How can he walk? And as soon as someone says that, you know what's coming next, don't you? So Ramanuja said, if I call him and he comes, then will you believe me? He said, yes. He sat back on his throne. He said, yes, let's have some fun with this funny sadhu. There's something about him, I'm not quite sure. He looks very intelligent, speaks very intelligently, but very puggle. So Ramanuja went into meditation and he called the Lord to come. And from the child's room, the princess's room, the deity came through the air and landed in front of the king. The king said, right, I know when I'm beaten. He said, what the armies could not do, you have done. But then the princess kicked up a fuss. She said, Father, that's my favorite toy. What are you going to? Where are you taking him? He said, he's taking him to South India. She said, but that's such a long way. Will I ever see him again? He said, no. He said, then I want to go with him. So she came with an army, a whole army, escorted the deity to South India. And she stayed there in Srirangam all her life. And one day, the curtains opened. And she walked onto the altar to see him again. And she never walked out. She just merged with the deity. That's the story, folks. That's the story I'm telling. So in great devotion to the deity. If you go there today, you'll find great devotion to the deity. We have if you go on the entrance to the temple, there's a little shrine, and in that shrine, there's the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in marble, installed by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It's one of the sort of eight to ten places in South India where he's installed his. So you can go there, offer some flowers, then carry on to the temple. And the temple, of course, has got the main deity, but around it's got many, many different deities. Is that okay? Okay, that's my. So today we have an initiation ceremony, and I call upon your blessings for me, for Sholi, in my ability to care for those who have asked me to initiate them. But I also call upon you to bless them as they begin that journey today. So we'll have that in a little while. I wanted to say something about my spiritual master. Let's see. So, one thing very much lacking in the world today is compassion. If there was more compassion, there'd be less problems. So it is up to the Vaishnavas to be the bestowers of compassion, the generators of compassion and kindness in the world. This begins the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Gurudas, when he was in the Radha Damodar temple and he found Prabhupada's diaries, and he read Prabhupada's diaries, and then he wrote a letter to Prabhupada and he said, what shall I do with your old diaries, Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, oh, you can burn them. And so all those diaries were burned because Prabhupada said, burn them. So what do? I'm a disciple of His Divine Grace. Do I preserve His diaries in contravention of His instruction, or do I burn them? So he burned them. But he told me a story from them. He said that Prabhupada used to get this photographic magazine from America. Was it Life, Vishaka? Was that the one? Or was it Time? Life. So there's a magazine called Life, which is sort of photojournalism. And one time when Prabhupada was sitting in Radha Damodar Temple, he saw pictures of them building a skyscraper in America. And he was caught by the caption under the picture, and it said, for every New York skyscraper, a soul is lost. Meaning that in the construction of every skyscraper in America, someone fell off and died. And Prabhupada was very much pained by that. He said, such a capable civilization, building such big buildings, but sacrificing so much in order to build so high, so much land, and yet they want to go this way instead of that way. Many years later, when Prabhupada actually came to New York, He said, our motto is simple living and high thinking. He said, their motto is, and he looked up to the 25th floor. He said, they're living 25 floors in the sky. He said, their motto is, high living, poor thinking. I was invited once to the home of a man who lived on the 45th floor of a skyscraper. There were only 47 floors. I said to him, I said, if you work really hard, you could get the top floor. 45 floors. You could look out, you see the Hudson River, and the helicopters were flying underneath his window. Under, you looked down on the helicopters. Absolutely incredible. But it just so happened that he'd made a beautiful, in one of his rooms, he'd made a beautiful Radha Krishna temple. Beautiful deities. That's the highest temple I've ever been in. So, Prabhupada thought that this was symbolic of a civilization that was not developing things of enduring value. Then, another story I want to tell you. Prabhupada came to a train station before he left India. And there was a big hoarding, big sign. This is all about pictures and signs. And it was a picture of a painting. It was of a steam train. And there were workers, Indian railway workers, all over the steam train. One was doing a little job here, another was doing a little job there. Another was putting in more coal, another one was putting in more water, another one was, you know, oiling the wheels, etc. Prabhupada looked at that, and the motto underneath it was written, keep the wheels turning. In other words, every employee of the Indian railway system was keeping the wheels turning. That's ultimately what everyone is meant to do. So Prabhupada gave a class one time, and he was talking about ISKCON, our movement. He says, whatever you do, something small even, but you're keeping the wheels turning. So please keep the wheels turning. It's nice, huh? So then he came to America. And in Boston, also on the East Coast where Prabhupada originally came, devotees had just bought a bus, a traveling Sankirtan bus. And Prabhupada looked at it and he said, let's go for a ride. And so devotees, they all piled in. And devotees were talking to each other. They said, where are we going? Where are we going? He said, I don't know. We're just going for a ride with Prabhupada. So they brought Prabhupada a chair from the temple because they'd taken out all the chairs, all the seats. So they put a chair in the middle of the bus and just were holding on to the legs. So the Prabhupada was directing with his cane. He was going this way, this way, this way. The devotees were mystified. Where are we going? So he took them to Commonwealth Pier, where he'd first arrived in 1965. And he was talking to them. He said, devotional service to Krishna must be pure. It cannot be mixed with anything else. No karma. In other words, you shall not mix with your bhakti, the idea of making money or going to the heavenly planets or having a nice birth in a good family in your next life, but rather only pure devotion to Krishna for the sake of loving Krishna. There should be no desire for liberation or jnana to merge with the divine effulgence of Krishna. So he was walking along the pier and he just lifted his cane and he pointed to a big sign. And there was a 100-foot sign, and it said, the Unalloyed Steel Company. He said, this is the first thing I saw when I came to Boston. He said, I thought, unalloyed devotion to Krishna will be my guide. So, nice story. So, Prabhupada had very simple beginnings. We all know the story, sitting under the tree and sharing the holy name of Krishna, not even a madanga drum, and gathering his first group of disciples. Prabhupada was aware that other swamis and gurus had come to America before him. But one day he said to his disciples, he said, I've brought some unique contributions that no one has brought before. Do you want to know what they are? He said, public chanting of the holy names of God. And we can say Jai.
Jai.
The English translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Jai.
Worship of the deity of Krishna.
Jai.
Large scale public festivals with prasadam distribution.
Jai.
These are Prabhupada's unique gifts. Somebody brought Bhagavad Gita before, somebody brought this and that, but no one brought these unique gifts. And of course, when Prabhupada brought Bhagavad Gita, he brought Bhagavad Gita written from the purport of the unalloyed devotion service. So today we have an opportunity for four candidates to become initiated. Initiated means that it comes from the Latin word initiare, which means to initialize, to begin. So many of them have spent quite some years beginning. There was a beginning of a beginning of a beginning, then there was a beginning of a beginning, then there was a beginning, and today we're going to have a beginning, initiation. So in life, everybody follows a philosophy. Philosophos, a search for knowledge. A search for knowledge is based, say the philosophers, on just one thing. Two things, actually. To maximize my happiness and to become free from unhappiness. This is why we get out of bed in the morning, why we do anything at all. Most people don't think, or they think that they don't think too much about philosophy, but a lot of thinking is done by others and passed on to us and drunk by us almost unconsciously through television and politicians and educational institutions and newspapers and magazines, conversation of friends and the way society is constructed. I was once ordered in the days when devotees were told what to do. You can't tell a devotee what to do today, can you? They say, I don't feel, that's not my bhav. Prabhu, can you go and clean the pots? And we need someone to help clean the pots. Prabhu, I'm not feeling it. It's just not my mood. That's why Prabhupada called the temple commander the temple commander. The active principle in that being commanding. Not that the temple commander is the person who empties the bins and washes the pots himself. You live in a temple, you get commanded. So I was commanded, go to Africa. So I went to Africa, but we didn't have much money, so I went via Moscow, as you do. You go on Russian Airways, and Russian Airways is so lax. So on Russian Airways, I was able to go and sit with the pilots and just have a chat with the pilots as we were flying. Anyway, so we reached Russia, and I was immediately struck. It was during Soviet times, but immediately struck by the absolutely no advertising in the airport. Nothing. When I say nothing, I mean nothing, just bare, absolutely bare. Whereas in this country, every single place is dominated by advertising. You don't notice it until you move to a place where there's no advertising. So I thought, it made me think how controlled we are. So those who have elected to become devotees, like our candidates today, pretty much they have said that from today the philosophy is going to be that I'm searching for knowledge which comes from one source, not a politician, not the TV screen, not a magazine, not the advertising hoarding, but I'm going to take the teachings from A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Not from me, by the way. It's from Srila Prabhupada. Just like we had, is it Smarahari? Smarahari, you were carrying Prabhupada this morning? So everybody was looking. And I was looking at Smarahari, and I was looking at Smarahari, looking at everybody else as he was carrying Prabhupada. Of course, it's his joy to carry Prabhupada. But if, due to some cloud of ignorance, he was to think to himself, "Everybody's looking at me. They like me." You would be misunderstanding. Just like the mosquito that landed on the king's knee, and he was looking at the audience and he goes, "Yep, they like me. This is all about me." And the king just went, and the mosquito was no more. So Srila Prabhupada is definitely our king. We are just his representatives, his vehicle, his mouthpiece, or as we were in our early days, his hands and legs to take his teachings everywhere. Sometimes people say, who's accepting disciples? Are they your disciples, or are they Srila Prabhupada's disciples? In the late 1600s and the early 1700s, this was a big discussion in Sri Rangam. And it led to a parting of the ways in the Sri Sampradaya. And they disagreed over 18 points. 18 points of philosophy. And one of the 18 points of philosophy is that some thought that it's the contemporary living guru that accepts the disciple. And the other person's thought that it's the historic acharya who gives deliverance to the disciple. They've never managed to. But in our tradition, it's a fusion of both. We all act. Just like Prabhupada was sitting and he was giving a talk, and he said, what is a guru? He said, now I can see you. Now I can see you. He said, and he put his glasses on and he said, oh. He said, now I can see you better. He said, then he took his glasses off again and he held his glasses up like this and he said, guru is a pair of spectacles, transparent via media. So if you have a telescope, for instance, and there's lots of lenses, the fact that you have one more lens doesn't decrease your ability to see a great distance. It increases. Prabhupada was giving a talk in Mayapur in 1975. He said, so we need 100 gurus in our movement. And all the devotees, you can hear all the devotees go, Jai. He said, we need 1,000 gurus in our movement. Devotees go, Jai. He said, we need 10,000 gurus. And the devotees go, Jai. He said, we need 100 million gurus in this movement. And devotees go, Jai. They go crazy. He said, so each of you become a guru and take this knowledge to every town and village. This is the point. So in this business, we are simply representing. Just like our Vishakha Prabhu the other day, she went and she represented all of us at the king's coronation. I hope you had a wonderful time representing us. I don't know about you, but I saw the video afterwards of Vishakha Prabhu walking down the aisle of Westminster Abbey, and I felt great pride. Here's a devotee representing all of us, not only all of us, but the entire Dharmic Indic community in this country. It's a wonderful thing. But that's the business of representation. You are honored according to who you represent. Just like we have our Lord Lieutenant who represents the king, and he comes to Bhaktivedanta Manor sometimes for Janmashtami, and we give him all honor as we would the monarch, because he's a representative. So in that way, it's about representing. So we have 6 things to do as devotees. We've got to reorientate ourselves to do all that is favorable for our devotion and to try to eliminate all that is unfavorable for our devotion. We have to have firm faith that Krishna will protect us under all circumstances. It's not easy. Let me tell you, it's easy when you're young. But when you get older and the body begins to misfire and misfunction, and you need someone to blame, then Krishna comes in very handy. You know, doctor came to me and he said, I'm sorry, you've got cancer. And I went and I prayed. I said, Krishna, why me? Why did you do this to me? Why did you do it now? What have I done wrong? I distributed books. I led kirtan. I gave classes. Why me? Why now? So we don't want to blame ourselves and our past impious activities, do we? We don't want to say, I must have been a very sinful person in my past life. We want to say, Krishna, you did this. When something goes right, I did this. When something goes wrong, Krishna, why did you do this? Prabhupada said, when the harvest is growing good, no farmer will thank the sun or the rain. He said, look, just see what a good farmer I am. I grew this field of grain. When the rain comes and destroys the crop, he shakes his fist. He said, God, why did you do this? So this is our tendency. This is our tendency. So beware this tendency. Krishna is the protector of his devotees. Rakshasya titi vishrasa. Remember Prahlad. It means to being a devotee, and certainly being an initiated devotee, means to accept Krishna as your maintainer. That somehow or another, Krishna will give me everything I need in life. Everything I need is coming from Krishna. Goptratve varanam. If you open up an account in India and you speak Sanskrit, there are some places where you can open up an account and speak Sanskrit to the bank. Did you know that? There's about 300,000 people who speak fluent Sanskrit. Anyway, if you go and make a deposit, a deposit account is called a Nikshepa Lekha. Nikshepa. And when you perform Atma Nivedan or Atma Samarpan or Atma Nikshepa, it means that you are making a consignment or a deposit of your very self at the feet of Krishna. This is what it means. But in all that, we maintain our humility, always understanding that we are have been brought to this position of surrendering to Krishna, not by our own abilities, but by Krishna himself. So, the main principle, of course, in the Padma Purana is that the Lord should be remembered at all times and the Lord should not be forgotten. This is the sum and substance of devotional service. In order to do this, we perform devotional activities and we minimize or eliminate any activity which will take us away from devotion. When Prabhupada first initiated disciples in New York, he didn't tell them about the regulative principles. That was crafty, wasn't it? Just chant these rounds. Sing, dance, laugh in ecstasy. Eat halava. And if you have any difficulty, there's a jar full of gulabs by the door. He didn't tell them anything. Then sometime later, after the first initiation, he pinned a notice to the door in his own handwriting. And this is what it said. All initiated devotees must attend morning and evening classes, must not be addicted to any kind of intoxicants, including coffee, tea, and cigarettes. They are forbidden to have illicit sex connection, must be strictly vegetarian, should not extensively mix with non-devotees, should not eat foodstuff cooked by non-devotees, should not waste time in idle talks, nor engage himself in frivolous sports, should always chant and sing the Lord's holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, November the 25th, 1966. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada talks about a fifth regulative principle. You know this one? It's not Facebook. You know what it is? When he talks about the four legs of Dharma, he talks about the fifth regulative principle, is accumulation of money. Hoarding of money, not spending it for Krishna's service. He talks about this. He says, Kali was punished by Parikshit and remains wherever wealth is accumulated. Because wherever wealth is accumulated, then you have an idea that I can do the other four. You know, if this Krishna consciousness doesn't work out, then I've got something to fall back on. That's a problem, isn't it? You ever thought like that? I'll get initiated, but if it doesn't work out, I can. And many people do. That's why the whole point of Krishna consciousness is not initiation. It's after initiation. It's after initiation. You know, after initiation. It's like our Tushar here. Give us a wave, Tushar. This is Tushar. He's the captain of a ship. Or for many years, he was the captain of a ship. So the whole point of being a ship's captain is not after the ship is launched, but it's what to do when you're on those rocky seas. So in spiritual life, you can be launched. Someone can smash a bottle of milk over your head, and you can go into the water, and everybody goes, Jai. There's a drum roll. And the queen says, I name this ship. Or the guru says, I name this disciple Vishnu Das. Jai! And Vishnu Das slips into the water, and away he bobs on the ocean of spiritual life. The main point is not the initiation. The main point is, who's going to look after Vishnu Das when it gets boring, when it gets dry, when he's having difficulties? I was saying to our Jaina Thai yesterday, who's looking after our devotee care, I said, caring for devotees means not that ISKCON cares for devotees. That doesn't work. You can't say that an institution will look after a devotee. That's like saying the NHS will look after your health. That's a generic, but a specific is doctor such and such is looking after you now. Nurse such and such is looking after you. Unless the specific individual looks after you, you don't get looked after. So within ISKCON, to look after people's spiritual life means one named individual must look after a number of named individuals. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Thank you. Sermon over. So our choice is, who's looking after you? That's one question. And don't be afraid to say that someone's looking after you, because we each need someone to look after us. Who's looking after you? And who are you looking after? Who are you caring for? Okay. And the answer cannot come, I'm too busy to look after anybody else, I'm just looking after myself. No. That's when a movement of compassion stops moving. And it becomes a society of practitioners. That's a dead end. We all have to be cared for, and we all have to care for others. I just want to dwell on, what's the time now? 1:45. Okay. There are 10 offenses to the holy name of Krishna. If you avoid these 10 offenses, your chanting will be pure. Most of us do not avoid those 10 offenses, therefore our chanting is impure. So you must know what the 10 offenses are, Srila Prabhupada said, just like you must know what the 26 qualities of a devotee are. Because just after he pinned that note to the wall, he pinned a note listing the 26 qualities of a devotee. He said, I'm giving you this list so that you can know what to aspire to. Yeah. So one who knows the 10 offenses will avoid the 10 offenses. You know what they are. But just for your sake. It comes from the Padma Purana. Satam nindanam na paramam aparadam vidanute yata kyatim yatam katam u sahate tad vigariham. It's number one, to blaspheme the devotees who have given their lives to the propagation of the name of the Lord. We say that. But to blaspheme a sadhu, someone who's given their life to Krishna, it is not enough to look around a room and think, I'm a good devotee, and this other devotee is a lesser devotee than me. Therefore, it's all right if I blaspheme them. It's all right if I correct them. It's all right if I harbor unhelpful thoughts towards them. Actually, Krishna will work in your life through the devotees, through the sadhus. And every single devotee can teach you something that you don't know. So that being the case, every single devotee is Krishna's representative. If Krishna wants to say something to you to help you with your awareness of him, who's going to say it to you? The man at the newsagents? The policeman? The bus driver? Maybe. But why not the devotee? That's why devotees, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says that devotees are always asking questions of other devotees. And the questions are, how are you serving the Lord these days? What have you discovered in the Shastras that has helped you this week? Please tell me something inspirational. Please tell me how I may serve Krishna better. These are the questions that devotees ask each other, not when's prasadam. Or someone coming to us in the corridor at Bhaktivedanta Manor looking very earnest, and you think that you're a philosopher, and they come to you, you know, you're walking down the corridor thinking, yes, who can I help? And someone comes to you and says, Prabhu, I have a question. And you draw yourself up to your full height, and you go, yes, I'm one of the senior members in this establishment. I can help you. Can you tell me where the toilets are? But that is also a very important question. It's also a very important question. Anyone who comes to this place is teaching us by their questions. But to ask important questions and to receive answers and to listen, very important. I will ask devotees to be very mindful of Prabhupada's instructions and to always follow him. There's been an explosion of black tilak all over our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Black tilak from different parts of Vrindavan. You should know that it's not authorized. You should know that it's only Gopi Chandan is authorized for our line. If you look at Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is wearing Gopi Chandan. The senior devotees are wearing Gopi Chandan. Everybody wears Gopi Chandan up until just a few years ago. It is not up to you to invent new colors, new ways, you know, because that's a way of drifting. And a boat adrift is no use to the passengers or to anybody. So we should be very careful there. So Gurur Avagya, follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Is that all right? Had to be said. Finally, I want to just talk about, one thing Prabhupada said here, Ashadanani Vimukepya Srinvati Yas Chopadesha Shiva Nama Parada. To speak too much about the glories of Krishna to a person who has no faith is not preaching, it's not helping. Prabhupada was upstairs in this very building with a famous musician that had spent time with the Beatles in Rishikesh. His name was Donovan. These days nobody has heard of him, but he came with his girlfriend, and Prabhupada was looking at Shyamasundar, and he said, you tell him something. So it was quite often Prabhupada would sit and listen while his disciples spoke to various guests. And Shyamasundar began with, you're not your body, Mahamantra, meditation, worked on to gopis and Krishna, and dancing the Rasa Leela. And the person was nodding, and Prabhupada said, all right. So that he left Prabhupada's room. So Prabhupada turned to Shyamasundar and he said, oh, you have committed the ninth offense. Shyamasundar was shocked. He thought he was preaching. He said, you have told him too much. If he has no faith, he won't be able to receive what you, and it will have the reverse effect. Similarly, in our life, we should be careful what books we read. The books that you read as disciples should be those books that can promote your faith, not challenge your faith. Sometimes I've had to deal with the unfortunate consequences of devotees reading books from Vrindavan. Now anybody writes about anything, don't they? And we sell it in the shop, and any book on any subject. But then devotees privately come to me and they say, my faith is just, I bought it in the temple shop at the manor and I just can't get my head around it because it's preaching to the faithless. So the books that you read should be commensurate with that. All right. Thank you for that. Finally, I want to say, are we okay for time? We're all right? We're doing okay? Prabhupada had a heart attack. He had another heart attack. And then he had a third incident in 1967. And at different times, he said that I don't know how long I have. At one time when he was going to Japan, he was going to Tokyo to print the Krishna book in 1970, he called his disciples in Los Angeles and he said, look, I don't know even if I'm coming back. But if I'm not coming back, I want you to carry on this movement without me. And he gave them an important series of instructions. So this is what he said. So my advice to you, I am an old man, so even I may not return, you shall continue this Krishna consciousness movement. This is eternal. And I shall request you to keep the standard as I've already given you the program. The deity worship, the kirtan, the street sankirtan, the distribution of books. You should carry on this program with great enthusiasm. That is my request. And then he reflects and he says, and he begins to describe the first couple of verses of the Upadeshamrita. He says, in the path of Krishna consciousness, the first principle is enthusiasm. If you lack enthusiasm, then other things will not happen. Okay? Where are you? Where's our candidates for today? Tushar, Arti, and Sham. Where's Tripti? Tripti's here? Oh, Tripti's on the chair, okay. So first principle is enthusiasm. If you lack enthusiasm, then other things won't happen. You can't do anything. Well, what if I don't feel enthusiastic? You know what Prabhupada said? Then you become enthusiastic to become enthusiastic. Fake it till you make it. He didn't say that. And you can keep enthusiastic, the secret of it, if you follow the rules and regulations and chant regularly. Hare Krishna mantra. Otherwise, that enthusiasm also will dry. So six things are required for advancing Krishna consciousness. The first thing is enthusiasm, utsahan, dharyat, and be patient, nishchayat, with conviction, firm conviction. Utsahan, dharyat, nishchayat, tat tat karma paravartanad. Following the rules and regulation, chalked out plans. And satovrate, dealing very straightforward, no diplomacy, no politics, no duplicity. All right? That will not help. Satovrate. Vrite, his profession, should be very straightforward. No underhand dealings between the devotees. Satovrate and sadhusanga in the association of devotees. Six things. Let's say them together. Enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm.
Patience. Firm conviction. Following the rules and regulations. Dealing straightforward. No duplicity. And in the association of devotees. If you can keep these six principles always in front, then your progress in Krishna consciousness is sure. There is no doubt about it. And with that, Prabhupada left for Tokyo. So our ceremony today is in two parts, the fire sacrifice and the name giving. We'll be in the Haveli. We'll have breakfast at 10, those who want to come to the ceremony. Those that don't, there's breakfast at 9, and then you can come in at 10 to, you know, just say jai. But if you want to be, you can launch the ship, so to speak. But I would like you all now to please say jai. What we want, I would like you to give your blessings to these devotees as they take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and ask him to bless them. And then they're going to surrender to Krishna by going to the altar here and bowing down. Is that okay?